Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds. Lawrence.
Gentlemen and ladies, let's broaden our minds on the Nothing But Truth show. Let's go beyond what you normally hear during the week when Crane Durham is on. The same over and over rhetoric. And let's talk about some different perspectives of some of the same problems. In particular, we're talking about Iraq and we're talking about our president. Because that is, I think, as Neil Young says on his new CD, what we're all living with. We're living with war. We are also talking, and we've had our guest on for much longer than he probably wanted to be on, because he probably wanted to go to sleep by now. But,
oh, I'm actually still good for a while.
I appreciate it. Judah Fried, coffee drinker like me, I'm sure.
Well, actually, I'm an hour west of you in Colorado.
So. Oh, okay. All right.
Not that late yet.
Judah Fried has written the book called Global Sense. It is an update on Thomas Paine's book, Common Sense, which, of course, rallied the American public to take charge of their own destiny. And as many historians said, and you point this out in the book, without Thomas Paine's wording and encouragement, the American Revolution may not have taken place, and we may actually have been under somebody else's rule for a long time. Global Sense is updated a version of Common Sense, only instead of an active and, I'd say, physical revolution, your book is more looking at an internal revolution. Is that fair?
Yeah, I'm advocating mindful self-rule and personal democracy.
We are going to be talking about a couple of things that, you know, you mentioned the Downing Street memo with George W. Bush, and whether or not there were fabrications about weapons of mass destruction. I know that Senator Arlen Specter is introducing legislation that will allow Congress to sue the president because of his signing statements, which, as you point out, nullify or distort the congressional legislation of bills that he signs. A signing statement is something where he'll sign something into law. Like, for instance, he signed into law the United States will not approve of torture. But then he has a signing statement that says, but in some cases I might change that. So a signing statement really allows him to come on and campaign and say, now I signed legislation that says we're not going to torture anybody. But by the same token, he also then has an out in that particular bill. And this is not just one instance. I believe that he has, as a matter of fact, I have that information over here. He has more signing statements than any other president in U.S. All the other presidents in U.S. history combined.
It's very curious to me that on one hand, he's had more signing statements, and but even past presidents haven't had signing statements that said that they're going to ignore the law they just signed. They just said that they have a different view of what the legislative history of that law might be. But it's very curious that rather than vetoing laws, he's just done signing statements, which is, I don't quite follow the logic of that.
Well, the Constitution allows for him to sign a bill into law or to veto a bill. And
right.
Then it's supposed to be another branch, which is the congressional branch, that can then take on that law in debate. And then it would be the judicial branch if it gets to the point where it needs to be defined.
Mm-hmm.
So
let me toss out a couple of ideas that might lead us into this whole conversation about authority addiction. The problem I have with the signing statements and fundamentally with a lot of the actions of our current president has to go back to the Magna Carta, where essentially it became the point that the king had to obey the law. He could not just willy-nilly do whatever he wished. He had to abide by the law. And what was going on with the U.S., what became the United States, but the colonists rebelling against King George III, was that he refused to obey the law and was willy-nilly passing decrees that were changing things. Of course, the Parliament in Britain at that time wasn't really helping with things like the Stamp Act and the Tea Act and these other things. But the problem was that King George III basically sort of issued a statement that said, you shall make no laws but what I please. And and the Parliament was essentially forced to only pass those laws that the king decreed. And I think in some regards we're seeing a situation that's similar to that today. And the deeper issue for me is the fact that we tend to be so reliant on needing a strong leader because, in my judgment, we're not really willing to accept responsibility for our freedom and lead ourselves. So here's a controversial pair of ideas. One is that I would like to see the Libertarian Party and those who consider themselves to be libertarian. I generally consider myself to be a libertarian, to join forces with the progressives. Because, indeed, I think it is in our best interest, because libertarians and progressives want to see smaller government. We want to see less government intrusion in our private lives. We want to see government basically really doing its job of protecting our safety and our security, and basically keep its hands out of where it doesn't belong. So I think there ought to be a natural coalition between the libertarians and progressives, and I think that's a much healthier unity than what we're currently seeing today with both Democrats and Republicans, funded by essentially the same forces.
And so if we're looking for another party rather than an independent party, a green party that Nader was trying to do, you're saying that if the progressives and libertarians join forces, that might be a better alternative to the current status quo of Democrats and Republicans most of the time.
They don't even need to declare a third party, but they can just simply be active within the framework they're already functioning.
Okay.
But be aware that there's a natural affinity, because they really fundamentally both want the same things.
Okay.
In terms of less government intrusion, I mean, the notion of the surveillance is just as offensive to libertarians as it is to progressives.
Well, and let's take a call on that. Ed is on line 3 and has a question about...
How you doing, sir?
About our rights and...
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My first statement is that the Downing Street memos were discredited for the fact that the paper trail couldn't be traced through the British government. It's covered by the Official Secrets Act of Britain and will be covered for the next 75 years. So who actually was the author of the Downing Street memo will never be known. Mr. Jude, I have a question for you. Can I ask?
Let's have a give and take here. Good conversation. Logically, to use an analogy, that would be like saying that the Nixon White House tapes that were leaked could not be credited because they were leaked illegally.
But, sir, that had Richard Nixon's voice on it, sir.
A pretty clear case of these
the
being
Downing
authentic
Street
documents
memos,
from them.
Who knows who wrote them, sir?
Excuse me, I'm trying to engage you in a civil way. We don't.
And
really
I am, too. Can I ask you a question?
Okay, you go ahead.
Okay, sir, my question to you is, as you quoted Thomas Paine about if your liberties, you deserve neither.
That's Ben Franklin.
Okay. Sir, would you agree that that in order to restore our liberties to what they were, pre 9/11, post Bill Clinton, that we deport all third world people from the United States of America? Yes or no?
I see that as just coming up with someone to demonize and not really dealing with the core issues. Which is,
sir, can I have a yes or no answer to that? Because I have another question.
Well, the answer is bigger than your question.
Can you answer yes or no? Yes, they should be deported. No, they should not.
I would say that what you're advocating will not solve the problem.
No, I asked you a question, sir. Yes or no? Can you
just
say yes or no?
No, Ed, he just answered your question.
Will not solve the problem that you're posing.
Then you're saying no, that will not solve the problem. Is that correct?
I'm saying that's not really the problem.
Okay. Then answer this question. How do you intend to take your philosophy, sir, of libertarianism and impart it on a bunch of third world people who do not want it in order in time
to
save Western civilization? How do you intend to do that, sir?
Ed, let him answer the question.
Hello?
I understand that you are inferring that I'm doing that, but I've never made that declaration. I'm advocating that each of us individually within our own selves practice responsible, mindful self-rule, that we clean up our own house, that we individually behave responsibly, that we practice personal democracy in our own daily actions, and that we set up a ripple effect that will have a long-term generational effect. And it's going to take time. It's not going to be an overnight transformation.
Ed, you're going to have to make it a quick comment.
My comment is this. This is nonsense. You have no intention of whatsoever. You cannot change 5 billion other people's minds, and they couldn't care less about what you say.
I'm not trying to change 5 people.
Your message is targeted towards a Western audience who couldn't care less.
Ed?
Have a nice day.
Hey, Ed. Ed. Hey,
well,
Ed. Ed, hung out. But, you know, but wait
see,
a second.
This is a really good example of the buttons that get pushed.
I understand that. But see, here's the deal with Ed, Judah. Ed sits at a kitchen table, and across the table is the salt shaker. And Ed says, "Pass me the salt shaker!" And that's his conversation. I'm Rick Sanborn. This is 97.1 FM Talk.
Yeah, that's right.